Raiders is a team that we don't care for.
Something, something, Bronco. With Lord Lattimore Volkner, Jess Place, and Tim Lynch.
Yes, my master.
Get involved in the conversation at milehighreport.com. Incomplete. You have tuned in to Something Something Broncos. I am Jess Place. Joining me this evening, Lori Lattimore Volkman and Tim Lynch. Today, Something Something Broncos is brought to you by the Denver Broncos Mentorship Academy, out of business since 2018. Yes! Yes! So, OTAs officially underway, all sorts of things happening. There's all sorts of press conferences and quotes and people talking, and we're all listening. And this is where I pitch it over to Tim. He's had a keen eye on all the things that are happening in OTAs. And Tim, what are you seeing at OTAs?
I'm not seeing much, Jess.
All right,
I'm in California.
Something Broncos. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Jeff Place, Lori Lattimore Volkman, and as always, the very loquacious Tim Lynch.
You caught me off guard with that. I'm like, I'm not seeing shit. I'm not there.
Tim is the Vic Fangio of MHR.
I'm not doing that.
So OTAs are underway in Dove Valley. At the UC Health Center there. Everybody, stop it! Stop! You're ruining everything, Lori!
I'm sorry. I am done laughing.
So all of Broncos country is super excited about Joe Flacco and his elite level of play that he is bringing to the Denver Broncos. He's had a lot to say with his about his new home, his new coordinator. Tim?
Sounds like Flacco's feeling comfortable with the system. It's not a whole lot different from Kubiak's system in Baltimore in 2014. He said that there's similarities, how the plays are called and the lingo. Obviously, it's a different offense, but he's picking it up fast, and he's liking what Scangarello is bringing to the table offensively. I think I'm excited. I want to see what it looks like, especially when training camp hits and we actually start to actually see videos, and actually see things happen, be on the field. Something he said that about Scangarello that I think is going to be underappreciated, but it's probably the biggest thing that he could have said about Scangarello out of the gates. And it also shows that Scangarello's system is going to be based on the strengths of the players, not whatever he's got written on his freaking clipboard and trying to put everybody into that box, So what Flacco said on Monday about Scangarello was on working with him, he said, I think honestly, it's a lot of me talking and a lot of him seeing what I've done throughout my career and how that fits into this offense. And then going through the clips and seeing the timing of things and how it works out, because he has plenty of film on all these plays these guys have run. Obviously, the quarterback is the quarterback. They take ownership of it, and the plays, this guy didn't hit his route a ton, but this guy has the ability to hit this route a lot more than that guy. Obviously, things get catered to the quarterback a little bit. Right now, it's just trying to learn the rhythm of the offense and the timing of your feet in the arm and the guys getting out of their breaks. When you hear Rich talk about that and you watch it get done on film and you're able to get out there on the practice field, you start putting it all together in your brain and walk yourself through it, and it gets really comfortable. I mean, when I read that whole thing, and you you can go find the quote, but it says that the things that he does well, Scangarello is finding ways to make sure that gets into the system that's getting put out there. It's getting tailored to what the quarterback does well and what the receivers do well, what the running backs do well, and then putting it all together so it all is just functional and strong. And so I'm excited to see that. That quote alone has me so excited to see what's going on in training camp and then in preseason and all that stuff. So I don't know. That's that was probably the biggest takeaway I had from anything said about Scangarello. And when we talk about the past, you know, Bill Musgrave and Mike McCoy, and, you know, I don't remember ever feeling like they were, I just didn't feel like they had a vision.
No, but they all said it. I'm with you. They all said that we're going to play to the player's strengths, and none of them, they did the opposite.
Not even close. No.
But the way Flacco described it, it's like, it's more, it just,
yeah,
it was that's specific. Why I read the quote exactly. It was not like canned. It was very, very
well thought out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel different about Scangarello, and he's the biggest unknown. If you really look at all the changes, nobody freaking knows how well he's going to be as an offensive coordinator. So, you know, that's kind of where I was at with the things that happened this week so far that's come out. Obviously there's the Chris Harris Jr. stuff, but yeah, we're going to be covering that like crazy on the site anyway. So I don't really want to rehash that. It's depresses me, honestly.
Well, back to Flacco. A lot of players are also saying really great things about him, and they're saying things about his football, not his leadership or whatever.
Mentorship.
I mean, it always comes up too, because he is a veteran. He is kind of a natural leader, but they're talking about what a good quarterback he is. Jeff Heirmann gave him a lot of praise too.
There's a caveat. After 3 years of Simeon, Lynch, and Keenum, Joe Flacco is going to look like a fucking god, okay?
That's true.
That's true.
But it's nice.
But I'm excited too.
When they're all, like, some of the things they're saying seem to be kind of like the Scangarello quote, like genuinely
excited about
positive,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, but are they excited because it's genuinely exciting, or are they excited because it's just different from like the pain, despair of last
year? Well, it could be. I mean, only time will tell. We'll see if we'll see how Flacco does. But
well, I know how I feel. You know, with Drew Lock being drafted, and normally that would be like, oh, Drew Lock, but it's not. I'm Joe Flacco. So I don't know. I'm more excited about Flacco than I am Locke right now.
I'm excited that they're seemingly doing this the smart way. Flacco is the starter, the unequivocal starter. We're not going to have a competition. We're not going to maybe see if possibly Locke is farther along than we think. He is developing this year. Flacco's the starter. And depending on how this year goes, will depend what happens next year. So they both know they're playing. Drew Lock is trying to do everything he can to be good enough to play next year, and Flacco's doing everything he can to be good enough to keep playing next year. And hopefully both of those scenarios mean far better quarterback play than we've seen in years. 3, to be exact.
I liked everything Flacco had to say, but that's really all I have to go on so far, because, you know, the media is not asking Scangarello questions that interest me right now.
What questions would you ask, Tim? Because you seem very down on the questions that have been asked. Like, what do you want to know?
How his scheme works, how he's going to, you know, what kind of play calling he's going to have in game, and just stuff like that. Right now, I don't really care. Oh, what'd you think of Drew Lock? You know, what is Drew Lock doing? What is Drew Lock doing right now? How about Drew Lock? What do you think of Drew Lock? I don't care. Drew Lock isn't going to play for 2 years, hopefully. I want to know what he's going to do in 2019. So if you want to know what I want to know, I want to know what's going to happen this year.
But they're not really going to tell us that anyway, right? They're not going to. He's not going to.
Well, give me some
unveil his
bullshit,
scheme.
Then. Give me some bullshit. I don't want Drew Lock news.
I think it would. It's always nice. I like the questions when they're trying to figure out kind of how they're using guys, where they're going to play different people, what positions they're playing them at right now, or which ones they're teaching them, because that gives you a little insight as to where they're going with the offense or the defense. Knowing how many tight ends he's going to use and how he'd like to use them for which roles, I think could be really intriguing. All these questions about, are you a mentor? Are you a leader? They just set these players up for saying something that will be a clickbait headline somewhere, because they're not really questions they're prepared to answer or they even have thought about. And I thought Joe Flacco actually handled it really well. And he's like, my job is to win games. So I'm out here trying to figure out how to do my job, which is how to play this position, how to learn this offense, who I'm going to throw it to, when I'm supposed to throw it to them, and working on my chemistry with all these new players. Like, that's what they're doing right now. He's not out there trying to coach up the guy that just joined the team 3 days ago.
They talk about mentorship, like, as though, like, he's taking him fishing and bowling and, like, you know, teaching him how to talk to the girl. Like,
right?
You know, like, what does that mean? Like,
it's because they just don't have a good question to ask. The definition of mentor is a trained advisor. These guys aren't trained to do that. They're not coaches. They're not teachers. But obviously, their personality may lend itself to that kind of relationship with their teammates, especially a veteran will tend to be a little bit more like that. But just because it's still not his role to go in there and teach or advise or train. His role is to learn what he's doing. And as he said, and Coach Fangio said, it's really on the younger guys to absorb that and allow that mentoring to happen by way of example, you know, by watching and listening and learning and paying attention to the details. Brock Osweiler, for all the jokes he's worth, he kept saying when he came in for Peyton Manning for that wonderful Super Bowl year, he had not been wasting his time. He had been paying attention and listening and doing everything he could to follow Peyton Manning's example. But Peyton Manning wasn't mentoring Brock Osweiler. Peyton was studying film and working with the players and figuring out what he needed to do and was just trying to be the kind of player that Brock could learn from. And that's, when we talk about mentoring in the NFL, I think that's really what is happening. But to expect them to, like, assume that's their job and their role is just, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
So there.
I'm going to take this time, okay, and I just want you all to know I've been here since 2011, and if you guys need anything, you don't need to ask, because I am available. My mentorship door is swinging wide open for all who want to come. I will teach. I will take you by the hand, and we will do this together.
Awesome.
Except for you, Tim. You have to hold my hand because you've been here longer.
Sink or swim.
Oh, good. You found our friend.
I did. I needed it earlier. Yeah, and I found it. Yeah.
I think it's exciting to listen to the players talk about the coaches, too, because I think they genuinely seem to really like the coaches. Every time they're asked, it's not like they just say, yeah, it's a good coach. I like the scheme. I mean, they seem genuinely enthusiastic about Scangarello, about Munchak. It sounds really, really good to hear them talk about the coaches like, you know, these guys are great. I can't wait to play in their offense or play in their defense or play on this team.
Now, is that different than what it was under Vance Joseph? Like, now, are we falling for it again? Like, No.
We wore T-shirts. Remember, we had the T-shirt said accountability. It said endurance, you know, strength. But everybody had a different T-shirt every practice. Remember that?
So they were excited about the T-shirts, not so much about. Speaking of, get your Mile High Report T-shirts online now.
I got my Orange Rush. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like that one. But I do think with Vance Joseph, there's always I really like him. I think they talked a lot about liking him, not so much about the scheme. I do remember them doing that with Kubiak, especially Wade Phillips, and being really excited about the defensive scheme and how it was going to have, they were going to be aggressive and they're going to be flying around. And they would talk about that in training camp, and that's exactly what they did. And that defense was amazing.
There were also some great T-shirts. Remember the Iron Sharpen Iron T-shirts they had under Kubiak? So, Tim, don't knock the T-shirts now. Like,
that was the motto to a Super Bowl, man. That's a great motto. I'll be your iron, Jess.
I don't think it's so bad to have a mantra that you put on a T-shirt. I anything you do to bring, you know, bring guys together, remind them what your mission is. I think people get behind that. It has more to do with who is the one suggesting it and doing it than it is the actual act itself.
Do they wear the t-shirt because they have to, or do they wear the t-shirt because they believe what's being taught?
Well, yeah. I think it's, whether they even wear it or not, it's more, do they believe what Vance Joseph is selling them, or is it just another t-shirt with a say and they're like, whatever.
Chris Harris Jr., do we want to just touch on that?
My thing about the Chris Harris Jr. situation is, both of these sides kind of screwed this up for themselves. John Elway lowballs a great player, which I think is so unfortunate and also so maddening that he tends to do this. But at the same time, Chris Harris Jr. needs to fire his agent. Because that agent, I think, is the one really souring this relationship with the Broncos. To come out 2 days before the draft with some bullshit ultimatum like pay me $15 million or trade me,
and have your agent get in a screaming match with your boss,
John Elway.
Like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, like, and the agent, I guarantee the agent is feeding Chris Harris Jr. a bunch of conceited bullshit because he wants more money too. You know, Chris Harris Jr. gets paid more, the agent gets paid more. $15 million when you are 25 and a Pro Bowler, sure, you know, Von Miller. But when you are almost 30 and a Pro Bowler, you still you're not going to get top of the market because they know that your ceiling is about to be hit. It's just a fact of life. Because, by the way, I pulled a hammy today running with my kids. God damn it.
Oh no, that's gonna, you're going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with that.
I'm just going to go to Colorado cryotherapy and I'll be back on the field in a week. I just feel like that was a stupid way to go about demanding more money. It's looking like both want to be stubborn and that probably ends badly.
Just to counter what Lori said, to tell she's totally wrong. Well, this is my two cents. In a former life, I used to work in business affairs at ABC, and I would work with contracts and agents and all sorts of crazy things. And so in my time, in my brief time working there, I will say this. The client and the agent are always working in tandem. The agent never does anything that the client does not agree with. And so to say that, you know, this is the agent, you know, going off the reservation or going off the rails and working outside of the norm that we all expect, might be giving too much credit to Chris Harris.
I don't think he's going off the reservation and doing something without Chris Harris, but I think he's advising Chris Harris poorly that this is a good way to go.
That's very possible. That is very possible. The other thing is that there is no right or wrong way to do a negotiation. A negotiation is its own living, breathing thing, and the end result is the validation of that negotiation. And so if Chris Harris does indeed end up getting $15 million a year or close to it, then everything that the agent did to get to that point was warranted because he did, in the end, what was best for his client. Now, as Bronco fans, we think that what's best for his client is for him to stay in Denver because we all love him very dearly and we would be very, very happy if he left. And so that's why we're very emotionally invested in this whole thing. But to the agent, to Chris Harris's agent, he just wants to get the most amount of money for his client because his client has advised him that I want the most amount of money because I am entering my 30s and I do need this money. And so, you know, it's all a means to an end. And it's not ideal that he got into a screaming match with John Elway. I wouldn't do that if I was in this negotiation. That would not be a wise move, because when you inject emotions into such things, it clouds things. It makes it a lot harder. However, I think that this agent and Chris Harris are a lot closer in belief with what they're doing than what a lot. And you know, we're in the Slack chat room at Mile High Report, and there is some thoughts that, oh, well, what's this agent doing? What's this agent doing? It's not just the agent. It's both of them together. And so, we can't lose sight of that. And, you know, he does, he wants the most amount of money, and if he has to end up going to Philly or Houston, like, Benjamin Albright, posited earlier today in his tweets, and they pay him, then God love, like, that's where he's going to go. And that sucks for us as Bronco fans, but that's, you know, that's it.
Would you pay him $15 million, either of you?
Well, here's the thing. If you come to a negotiation saying, this is what I want, and you never intended to negotiate down, I mean, then you obviously want out. So, you know, the whole point of negotiating is to find a middle number. And Von Miller said it best. This was his exact quote when he asked about, you know, taking it personally. He said, whenever you talk about money and contracts, I think it's both sides. It's not just the player. I think it's the guys in the front office that take it personally too. They want to get a great deal done and have a solid deal too. And I think both sides take it personally. If you focus on business and it's all about business, it's easy to get done. It either gets done or you move on. That's the business side of. So yeah. It's both sides are taking it personally, and neither side is, somebody's got to budge, or it's not ever going to come to a meeting halfway point. And if Chris Harris Jr.'s agent is never going to come down from $15 million a year, he's going to cost his client a lot of money, because the Broncos are going to trade him, and the next team isn't going to give him $15 million a year.
Just ask Elvis Dumervil. He'll tell you all about it.
Ask Brock Osweiler. I mean, he negotiated a great deal, went somewhere else, but that ended quickly, and now he's getting nothing, nowhere.
So, Chris Harris, we love you. Stay with the Denver Broncos. We want you to be a Bronco forever. Retire, Ring of Fame, the whole thing, fireworks. We'll do fireworks for you. You deserve it. But please stay with us, and don't yell at John Elway.
Awesome. All right. I think it's time for the mystery question.
All right. What is your mystery question?
My mystery question does not have an answer that we know of, but we'll see if we can tweet Von Miller and find out. So, Von Miller was the director of fun at the Kentucky Derby a week ago, and he loves to go to the Kentucky Derby. He also put money on Maximum Security, which, if you know any of the story, Maximum Security won, but then there was a protest that the horse had actually had run into another horse and caused all kinds of problems, and so they protested, and Maximum Security was then disqualified. So,
long story short, they put the horse down.
Yeah. What kind of drug did they use? No. So
no, that's terrible.
So Von Miller had put money down on Maximum Security, and he was at the window apparently ready to collect, thinking that Maximum Security had won, and only to find out that he'd been disqualified. And was so bummed and was like, ah, oh, what do you mean? And apparently you can, if you keep your ticket, somehow you can get some money back because the horse was disqualified. Either that's a rule, or it's just because it's Von Miller and they didn't want to upset him. Either way, my question is, how much money do you think Von Miller put down on Maximum Security to win?
Can we use like qualifiers? Like, would we say it's like more or less than, like, Case Keenum's, like, game check for, like, one game?
No. What was his game check?
Well, hopefully it wasn't that much. Cause
$2 million a game.
It wasn't. If it was performance-based, he's paying the Broncos. Take that, Case Keenum!
All right, Jess, you're down for $500,000?
I'm going to say Vaughn is a very savvy fellow. I don't see him blinging it up. I'm going to say it was probably a very gentlemanly bet. I bet it was maybe just a couple $100. Get a little action just for the excitement of it. But, you know, he doesn't strike me as like Floyd Mayweather, like dropping millions on things, you know, so that's my impression. Maybe a couple $100, no more than $500.
All right.
Well, considering he grabbed what's-his-name's ticket, too.
It was the Titans head coach who dropped his ticket and didn't want to keep it.
That tells me maybe he didn't put as much money down as he had hoped. So I'm going to say $25. He's like, damn, I could have won way more. Give me that ticket.
$25?
I don't know. This is the Kentucky Derby.
What do high rollers actually bet?
I have no idea.
I mean, I'm going to go with $10,000. Fawn's got money. You think he's not going to...
Yeah, but he's got money because he is smart. He's a smart...
No, he's got money because he can kick the crap out of a quarterback.
Let's transition this. Okay, well, this will be a long-term mystery question. Who goes bankrupt first? Cam Newton or Von Miller?
Oh, Cam Newton. He keeps buying all his stupid clothes.
He's already...
I don't know. I'm gonna base that off what he actually bet. If it's 10 G's, I'm going to say Von Miller.
10 G's. Come on. I mean, if you are making... Boy, how much money does he make a year in his salary?
If I was making as much as he was making, I would have put $25 down. It's a freaking horse race. What do I know about horse racing?
Yeah, if you win, the odds are...
He makes way more from that Old Spice sponsorship than he does from the Denver Broncos anyway. Like, I mean, I see that commercial all the
time. Yeah, but when you have that much money, if he lost $10,000, it's nothing. But if he... It's Von Miller. You and I, it's, you know, like, I don't know, it's 3 months rent.
But you hear about these sports millionaires that go to Denny's or whatever, and then they stiff the waiter, and, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, he has all that money, but he didn't grow up with all that money. And, you know, money is money, man. Like, you can't be dropping 10 G's here and 20 G's there. And I mean, he's got a chicken farm. I don't know. I stick $500 or less.
I'm down with that because I'm at $25.
You've been listening to Something Something Broncos, a feature of MileHighReport.com with Lori Lattimore-Volk, Jess Place, and Tim Lynch. Get involved in the conversation at MileHighReport.com.
A correction on the reporting of the foul. Both fouls were on the kicking team.
Tim, what are you seeing at OTAs?
I'm not seeing much, Jess.
All right,
California.
Something Broncos. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Jeff Place, Lori Lattimore-Volk, and as always, the very loquacious Tim Lynch.
No,
I'm not seeing much. I don't care. It's just the beginning. We're just doing some stuff. Let's move on.
Okay. You had four quotes from Scangarello. Is that I can read you the
No, quote. No. I have four quotes from Joe Flacco.
All right.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.